Hey team, we're fired up to talk to you today with an up-and-coming junior officer and his platoon sergeant from the 4th Infantry Division on the topic of everything op-boards. From the dreaded tool that every cadet endlessly completes for a session to the document that is the cornerstone of Mission Command, this episode will aim to provide you with some actionable steps that you can take from planning through execution when writing op-boards for your own missions. We're pleased to welcome to the huddle 1st Lieutenant Luke Hutchison. This is the Leaders Huddle Podcast, Episode 20, Tips for Solving the Op-Board Dilemma. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle Podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company-grade officers through advancing the discussion of leadership, professionalism, and building high-performing organizations. I am your host for today's episode, Captain Micah Klein. On today's episode, our First Lieutenant Luke Hutchison. Luke graduated from West Point in 2013 and deployed to Kandahar, Afghanistan within a year of graduating, and served on staff as an infantry platoon leader conducting patrols around Kandahar Airfield. He deployed again to Kuwait and Afghanistan as a company XO in 2016. He recently started the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum Colorado Springs Drink and Think with Major Joe Byerly to bring local military and civilian innovators together. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle. Feel free to fill in any gaps from your bio that I may have forgotten and seem appropriate.
Thanks for the intro, and I'm looking forward to passing on some of the ideas so hopefully other folks out there can avoid some of the mistakes that I've made along the way.
All right, very cool. So, for me personally, as a logistician, the lifeline of everything that I've done in the Army came from Annex I. I vividly remember being at career course and hearing for the first time Annex I, and I think that by the time I left career course, I couldn't forget that. So, and then when I heard about it as a lieutenant, to my individual concept of support briefing at Captain's Career Course, Annex I has been really then at the forefront of my professional mindset. FM6-22 emphasizes the role that the Army leader takes in employing engaging communication techniques. While this episode won't break down every single paragraph of the op order in detail, we are going to discuss how you can use communication and your intent as a commander and an Army leader in a way that engages your soldiers and prepares them for a successful mission. So I want to start with our first question. Can you just tell us a little bit about your background and what piqued your interest in op orders?
Sure. Like every platoon leader, and especially combat arms platoon leaders, you're constantly planning and briefing missions, whether it's a condensed RAM brief or a complete order. While I was deployed, I would typically pitch a condensed 20-minute RAM brief before each mission, but still use a 5-paragraph format. There were times when we had more complicated missions, and I would brief a full op board, but typically the missions we were doing didn't change so much, so they didn't require as in-depth of an op board. However, when we got back to garrison and began our train-up for the second deployment and began briefing much more thorough op-boards, I realized that my platoon was much different audience than a group of second lieutenants in IBLOC, because most of the soldiers, and even a lot of the NCOs for that matter, had never really been taught the basic language of an op-board or basic tactical tasks and terms. So I got together with my platoon sergeant and developed a training program to address that gap.
What do you think your platoon sergeant's initial response was to the training program? So I remember when I was a platoon leader and I approached my platoon sergeant, and the first training plan that I really wanted to do was night driving and doing so in Iraq. And I remember he was sort of caught off guard. He was like, because to be fair, it came out of nowhere. But do you remember that initial response and sort of what did that look like?
Yeah, so I think there was definitely some hesitation because what we were doing wasn't, really a natural thing to be trained. I mean, typically it's EIV tasks or cleaning weapons or just basic things like that. So when I said, hey sergeant, what about this idea of doing a basic infantry knowledge test where we focus on key terms, focus on the language of an op order, it took him a little while to come around, but once we pitched another op order for, I think it was a platoon training exercise, and he was looking at the guys and he started seeing the same things that I've been talking about, where guys just weren't getting it or they weren't understanding, or it was taking twice as long because I was having to explain every single term that they should have known. So he eventually came around to it.
Huh. That's very interesting. That's cool. So in an article that you recently penned, which for all of our listeners out there, we'll add that article to the show notes, you discussed the op-board dilemma that you faced and that many other platoon leaders face. So what exactly is that op-order dilemma?
So a dilemma is what we're always trying to present the enemy, right? Choosing between multiple bad options or options that are not desirable. So as a PL, I found myself in an op war dilemma, where I was always choosing between three bad options when it came to briefing styles. The first style that I call is a doctrinal style, where you ensure to use all doctrinal terms and is the style you get an A for an I block and the style your company and battalion commanders will understand. However, your soldiers will probably fall asleep and have no idea what you're talking about. I think this should still be the goal style that folks shoot for, but with most platoons, it'll take some training to get there. The second style is the layman style, where you don't speak doctrinally, but in a way that your soldiers will understand. However, your commander will be confused and upset, and also any adjacent units or platoons will be confused. Your briefing won't have created shared understanding, which is a principle of mission command. The third is the teaching style, which is a hybrid of both past approaches where you speak doctrinally, but also take time to explain everything. This is the style that I most often fell into. But the drawbacks with this style is that it often takes twice as long and wastes valuable time in the TLP process. And again, often also puts soldiers to sleep. So in the article, I propose a way to brief using the doctrinal style, but it requires a little bit of training with your platoon on the front end.
Awesome. I think that the point, the style that I use probably most as a lieutenant was the layman style. It's funny. I got to the point where I was so used to briefing the same op order because the missions that we were running were a lot of the same. And this is, of course, again, a deployed to Iraq. And it didn't serve me well just because I was so used to doing it. And then when we had different units come in who are on our platoon, convoys or whatever, my soldiers were so used to hearing it, and I was so used to briefing it that no one else understood it. So when we had adjacent units, meaning like other reserve and National Guard forces or other active forces that were being sort of tied into our convoy, yeah, it was like deer in the headlights because we had been so used to it. And I guess maybe, you know, just thinking about that and reflecting on it could be a little bit of complacency. But saying that now, of course, a number of years later, so...
Absolutely.
The next question that I have is about CONOPS. You talked about CONOPS in your article. There's been a lot of controversy, actually, about the whole CONOP replacing the op order because of its simplicity. Thomas Doherty wrote an article about the topic in Small World's Journal. What do you think of the Army's fascination with the CONOP? Why do you think we're fascinated with it, for starters, I guess? And when is the right time for the platoon leader to use a CONOP instead of an op order?
So first, I think it's important to mention that there's nothing inherently bad about a CONOP. I mean, they quickly have a lot of graphics. They're an easy way to quickly share information about operations across many organizations. There's also nothing to say that a CONOP can't contain the same exact information as an op order. However, doctrinally, a CONOP is not a mission order, but a subparagraph of an op order. And that's really where the issue is, that there's no standard for CONOPs. So there's a tendency to not include a lot of the information that would be in an op order. Thomas Doherty's article found that to be the case. While he was serving as an OCT at the Joint Readiness Training Center, he reviewed 5 battalion and 12 company or troop CONOPs. Paragraph 3 was the only paragraph with any level of detail. He also interviewed 61 MCCC grads, asking them that if they briefed their higher headquarters orders as a MCCC student, would they have passed? Only 11.5% said that they would have passed. So Thomas Doherty's concern and my concern about the CONOP is that it looks like critical thought has gone into the planning process, but in reality it hasn't, and that key variables, particularly paragraph 1, haven't been analyzed, so that when the conditions change and decisions need to be made on the fly, time hasn't been invested on the front end to inform those decisions. He references a lack of terrain analysis at the Battle of Wannat, where 2 enemy companies were able to get into their assault positions undetected despite the unit having high-tech optics. A lack of critical thought about the most dangerous course of action, for example, probably one of the most negligent things a leader can do, because the enemy is always thinking about new ways to attack. Part of the root issue as well, I think, is that I don't think the purpose of planning is well understood. We're always told in school and by our leaders and NCOs that no plan survives first contact, and I couldn't agree more. But that line of thinking often becomes an excuse to not plan at all. General Eisenhower famously said, "In preparing for battle, I've always found that plans are useless, but planning is indispensable," which I think is much more accurate, because the process of planning develops the understanding necessary of all the important variables, weather, terrain, friendly, enemy, etc., so that when you have to make changes on the fly, it won't be the first time that you're critically thinking about the variables.
So I've got a follow-up question to that. So I'm a fairly recent graduate of Bullock, not too long ago, I guess, compared to David and I, at least. And I'm just curious how they're, you know, training critical thought there, and I guess to avoid the this CONOP dilemma that we're talking about.
Right. So it's been probably about two years since I was in iBook, so it's been a minute. But when I went through, at least, they really focused on the op board and really hammering it home and making sure that we developed very thorough orders. We had to brief it. At least three complete op orders three times. And I remember at the time thinking, you know, this is dumb, this is stupid. You know, when I'm deployed, we're never going to be briefing a full order. And for 99% of our missions are absolutely right. But I think that habit of really intricately understanding an op order and what goes into it, it then allows you, so when I'm pitching a 20-minute ramp brief to the boys before a mission, you know, I'm taking out certain things. But at least on the front end, I'm doing all the analysis and thinking about, do I need to include this? Do I need to include that? So I'm doing all the analysis, even though I may only be pitching a smaller part of it. So I think in that sense, iBook was certainly helpful for developing that critical thought. And my first commander was all about having doctrine and having the op-board format, regardless of if it was a 20-minute ramp brief or a more complex mission. Where I would read from full order, depending on the complexity of it.
Huh. Yeah, that's awesome. You know, I get a lot of the cadets that are in my class asking me for advice on, you know, going to Bullock and preparing, which I'm sometimes, I mean, at a loss for, right? So if you had, you know, our listeners being new lieutenants or soon-to-be lieutenants that are preparing to go to iBullock and being prepared to think critically and take care of and get the A on the op board, what advice would you offer them?
So I think in terms of preparing yourself for iBullock or whatever bullock you go to, you know, it's important to differentiate between education and training. You know, when you're in iBullock, you're going to get all the training you need. You're going to learn all the little details. You know, each platoon mentor is going to, you know, have a little bit different preference for how they want things. But one thing that I think is absolutely indispensable, though, is really embracing mentors and self-study. Because at West Point, I mean, you're so wrapped up, and as a cadet in general, in your studies, you don't really have time to do a lot of professional reading. Right? I know, at least as a cadet, I didn't. But after I graduated, I really embraced it. I went to a conference right after graduation called the Defense Entrepreneurs Forum in Chicago. I met an awesome mentor, Major Joe Byerly, who I've stayed in touch with to this day, and recently started a group out here with him. And he's really provided me a lot of info. He has his website, From the Green Notebook, where you have leaders across the Army, you know, all the way up to four-star generals, writing articles about leadership, strategy, tactics, and really diving into that stuff is something that's going to set you apart in Bullock, because you'll be read up on, you know, the most up-to-date concepts, the thought leaders in our profession, and you'll really be ready for whatever's thrown at you.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny you say that. We had Major Byerly and a couple other folks on the podcast here a couple episodes back, probably about 9 episodes back, talking about digital learning and e-communication. So hearing you say that name just, you know, kind of brings a smile to my face. It's funny hearing some of the same names and folks out there who are passionate about leader development. That's great.
Absolutely.
All right, so I want to move on to the next question, which sort of is, you know, has a little bit of similarity to the last question, but are there any training strategies or techniques that you used as a platoon leader on the front end before delivering your op orders? And then what advice would you give to our listeners who want to prepare themselves for their own professional development?
Sure. So with any advice, I think it's always good to start by assessing your situation, because every environment, every platoon is unique. When I first started as a PL, I went on 2 RIP patrols, and the 3rd patrol, I was a PL. Our missions were pretty cut and dry, and the platoon ran well, and there was no need for major changes. So I wouldn't recommend implementing kind of this training strategy that I'll talk about here at a time like that. However, when we got back and I lost a lot of experienced NCOs and gained a lot of new soldiers, leader development and training became a top priority for us. With my platoon sergeant, we identified topics that every soldier needed to know to understand an op ward and speak doctrinally in a light infantry unit. They were tactical tasks, rapid control measures, unit symbols, risk estimated distances, friendly and enemy weapon identification and ranges, offensive and defensive doctrine, op ward paragraphs, scheme of maneuver development, urban operations, machine gun theory, and machine gun math. Those are obviously topics most relevant to a rifle platoon, but a leader in any branch could develop a similar program of instruction and tweak it to the needs of their unit. We spent a week teaching these topics, developed a test for them, which I think is being included in the show notes, and if they scored 90% or above, got to go home early that day. We also integrated the training into practical exercises and missions to reinforce the information, because we didn't want it to just purely be a pen and paper exercise.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned briefly in your article, you talked a little bit about CTCs. I'm just wondering if any of those topics that you felt that the soldiers needed to know and train them on came up again during any CTC rotations you went on.
Absolutely. So unfortunately, I ripped out as a PL just before our platoon went to the National Training Center. But I know for a fact that when they're conducting their operations, you know, having a knowledge of the difference between an ambush versus attack by fire, tactical tasks, being able to think about the defense was certainly helpful. My platoon sergeant also went to the advanced leaders course shortly after we did this training. And he came back with just, you know, a big old smile on his face and glowing, because he said he performed much better than most of his peers, because they had to set up the defense, they had to do engagement area development, they had to pitch op wards, and he had already studied all this stuff beforehand, and although he wasn't, you know, perfect at it, but he at least knew what the doctrinal references were for it and had a little bit of a background in it. And he ended up teaching a lot of the classes when he went to ALC.
Wow, that's great. You know, I think personally, I mean, to me, I hear all the time the, you know, and it almost gets stale, the saying, taking care of your soldiers. That right there, I mean, to me at least, is definitely taking care of them, setting them up for success, and, you know, thinking about just really their future and the future of their soldiers that they'll lead.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a big part of it, too, is, you know, when they understand the tactical tasks and terms, I mean, there's obviously going to be immediate resistance, you know, having to study anything. But there was, on the back end, I think they really felt empowered, because now when they recommended something to me, they knew that they were using doctrinal terms, and they knew that what they were saying was legitimate, and that I was much more likely to say yes to it, as opposed to them just trying to explain it non-doctrinally. So it really empowers your NCOs and your soldiers to have them be able to speak doctrinally on a level, you know, commensurate with someone that's graduated from a bullet course.
Right. Speaking the same language, definitely. So often we hear the saying that it's crucial to trust your NCOs. So in episode 17, we featured an interview with an NCO, Sergeant First Class Harlan Kafalis, and he echoed that same sentiment. How did you use your NCOs during the briefing process? And how did you as a leader work on developing their communication competencies?
So I take the trust your NCOs wisdom with a grain of salt, and most NCOs would agree. I would say by and large that is true, but it's important to keep in mind NCOs are people too, and that if they haven't been trained on something, they probably aren't going to be great at it. With that said, I went in with the false expectation that all my NCOs had the same, if not better, understanding of battle drills and doctrine than I did. However, that couldn't have been further from the truth. When I took a step back and realized that my NCOs had a ton of knowledge, a ton of deployment experience, but they really hadn't been taught anything on par with IBLUG until they went to the Advanced Leaders course, typically around Penny E6, and even that is much shallower than IBLUG. With a platoon of junior E6s and E5 squad leaders, the training simply wasn't there. So the tactical topics were divvied up so that I had some, my platoon sergeant had some, but the squad leaders really had the most. The process of validating the squad leaders before they taught was very beneficial, because for most of them, that was the first time that they were really digging into doctrine. Additionally, they really wanted to understand the material, since they were presenting in front of the entire platoon and wanted to look like they knew what they were talking about.
You said validation. I'm just curious, what did you use to validate them?
So as part of the 8-step training model, train to validate leaders, right? So it's what we would do to validate them is we would give them, and I think with doctrine training in particular, it's very important to lay out the scope, because you could study doctrine for years and decades if you wanted to. So we gave them a very clear task, like we want to teach a class on friendly and enemy weapon ranges. So we would give the squad leader a task, and the task was teach the platoon on friendly and enemy weapon ranges and identification, especially for enemy weapons. That squad leader would then come back to us with his proposed list and say, hey, these are the weapons that I think the platoon needs to be familiar with. We would then give him, you know, yay or nay, or maybe add a few, take a few back. And then he would develop his class and find his own resources and then pitch the class to us. And then we would then validate him, give him feedback, practice. He would then pitch it again to us. And then once we were confident that he was ready to go, he would stand in front of the platoon and pitch the class.
Very nice. I'm hearing resources. Two words that came up actually that I just heard are resources and communication. So are there any resources that you would point our listeners to in terms of effective communication?
Absolutely. So two books that come to mind. The first is Start With Why by Simon Sinek. I know he spoke at West Point while I was a cadet there. I'm sure he's come back. Start With Why is an excellent book. Task and Purpose is the most basic approach to leadership in which everything else is rooted in, I believe. It's important to understand, though, that purpose drives task and not the other way around. If you invest time in thinking about and communicating the why to your soldiers, because the task will be meaningful, they can then make decisions within that purpose when the conditions change, i.e. Mission Command. The second book is Getting to Yes by Roger Fisher and William Hurry. It's a classic negotiation book, and as a PL, you're constantly negotiating, whether it's with your platoon sergeant, commander, Afghan police chiefs, you name it. Developing creative solutions to people problem is what you get paid to do, and that's how I define negotiation. And obviously, communication is a critical component to negotiation.
Yeah, and we will include those books in the show notes, so thank you for that. Without diving too deeply into the question of telling your soldiers why, it's funny, that's one question that my cadets always get sort of hung up on, is whether or not we should be explaining the why behind our orders. So I don't want to get into that, because I feel like we'd be opening a can of worms, not related to op orders so much, but I don't know, just maybe something to think about.
Yeah, I think the why is the most important thing. It's the part of a mission statement. It's part of a task and purpose. And at the end of the day, when the conditions change, which we'll really get into here in a minute, the task can change, but the purpose remains the same.
Yeah, very cool. So we talked a lot about training and building competencies in our NCOs, and of course each other. I'd love to hear what some of the results were of the op order training that you did.
When briefing op orders, I noticed the soldiers were a lot more interested because they now understood the words that I was using. I think they also took a lot of pride in now understanding the terms and felt empowered because they could now make recommendations that I would be much more willing to accept because I quickly and easily understand them. One of the most gratifying experiences, though, is during a brigade training exercise. My platoon was given the task of ambush by our company commander with the purpose of disrupting the enemy's main advance during a defense link. However, my weapons squad leader made the following recommendation and as a result destroyed the enemy's main effort with few friendly losses. Prior to our training, he would have given me a much longer, non-doctrinal recommendation that I would have had struggled to understand and certainly would have had a hard time translating and making the recommendation to my company commander. It would have sounded something like this. Sir, we should move further away because there are too many trees, and it will be difficult to see the enemy and engage. We also won't be able to make use of the longer range weapon systems. Also, if the enemy comes down a different way, then we may not be able to readjust to attack them, and they may have actually had the upper hand on us. We're also going to be very close, which will result in high casualties. I think we should go to that hill over there because it will be better. I'm not sure how you'd explain that to the commander. So you can sort of understand what he's getting at, but it's a long and confusing recommendation. Next, I will discuss what his recommendation actually looked like, because this training was completed, this training exercise was completed after we did the op-board training. After the training, it sounded like, "Sir, the terrain will restrict us to a risky near ambush and limit our ability to reposition if the enemy uses a different course of action. I recommend we conduct an attack by fire, which will better meet the commander's intent. It will also allow us to better utilize our weapon systems, allow for greater flexibility, and greatly reduce the tactical risk." As you can tell, that explanation took about half as long. I wouldn't have to spend a second thinking about what he was trying to say, which, of course, is the benefit of having a common language or doctrine in our profession.
Yeah, so you talked a lot about the company commander. I've heard that a couple of times. And we have a lot of company commanders out there that are listening to the podcast. What did your company commander do to support you that proved to be overly very effective?
Yeah, so some things that my company commander did, like I said, he was very op-board and doctrinally focused in ensuring that we always used doctrinal terms to describe things. So I think that certainly helped. Other things that he did was allowing me flexibility. So when we were doing platoon situational training exercises, I had one of my squad leaders that was going to Ranger School actually serve as the platoon leader for that operation. So he developed the briefing, pitched the op board, led the operation, and then I sort of OCT'd him. And in allowing me the flexibility to do that, that certainly helped him and that squad leader immensely in better understanding the terms and in really reinforcing what we talked about.
Very nice. That's great. So one follow-up question to that. Do you have any advice or action steps or recommendations that you would offer up for anyone who's thinking about implementing this at the company level?
Sure. So for implementing at the company level, I talk a little bit in the article about this. But I think the company commander is really positioned very well to be the one that oversees it. Obviously, they're the commander, so they have experience being a platoon leader, probably deployment experience as well. Most importantly, they've also recently graduated from MCCC or their respective career course. So they have the most up-to-date information about doctrine changes and have just recently been grilled for 6 months on pitching doctrinally. So essentially, I make the recommendation that if you're a commander who wants to implement this, that you do sort of the same thing that I did with my squad leaders, but with the platoon leaders. Where you take the platoon leaders in, you practice, do LPDs, discuss doctrine, make sure that all of your platoon leaders and platoon sergeants, for that matter, have a good grasp of the concepts, that they develop a program of instruction that has a good scope, that they're covering things that will prepare you for, you know, whatever phase of the training cycle you're in, whether you're deployed in a red cycle, doing train up for a deployment or NTC or JRTC. And that, I think that's a good way to make sure that your platoon leaders and platoon sergeants all are on the same sheet of music, so that whatever they're teaching across your company is fairly uniform. And then obviously they can, you know, still giving them the freedom of maneuver to tweak it within their own platoons, I think is important, because you're going to have varying levels of strengths of NCOs, platoon leaders across your force, and then that will allow those platoon leaders to implement this program.
Awesome. That's really cool. All right. So for our listeners, is there any way that we can follow you on Twitter or anything like that?
Absolutely. So my Twitter handle is at Luke Hutchison, just like my name is spelt, or you can email me at hutch.luke@gmail.com.
All right, great. Well, thank you very much. So this wraps up today's Leader Huddle podcast. In the next episode, we take a dive into the topic of self-aware leadership and interview Mike Irwin from Team Red, White, and Blue about his own experience with the power of self-awareness. You can connect with us on iTunes, and we're also on the Google Play platform. We want to hear from you, our listeners, on the topics you would like us to discuss, so please leave a comment in iTunes or through the Caldol-sponsored Facebook page at Junior Officer Forum and Twitter handle @JO_Forum. Until next time, remember that elevating your performance and unleashing your potential as a leader takes an intentionality and the humility to learn from others.
The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.